Welcome to episode 274 of the Women of the Military podcast. This week, my guest is Erin Hill. Erin went from military to millionaire. In this episode, we highlight her time in the U.S. Army and how she was able to become a self-made millionaire. She attended West Point, and shortly after gaining her commission, she was deployed to Iraq. She served for about 8 years. She had planned to serve in the military for 20 years, but days after returning from maternity leave, she was tasked with a deployment, and her husband was already tasked with a deployment, and it was life-changing with a baby at home, and she decided that it was the right time to leave the military. I'm really excited to share her story, and I'm really thankful to not only have her as a guest, but also a Patreon supporter. And she was also on the podcast last month talking about Veterans for Financial Freedom. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, I highly recommend taking a look. And I'm really excited to share this interview. But before we get started, let me remind you that Women of the Military podcast is available on Reese Across America Radio on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, and you can listen on iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, or Odyssey. And now with that out of the way, let's get started with this week's interview. Welcome, everyone, to Women of the Military podcast. I'm really excited to have Erin here. She was on the podcast last month talking about Veterans for Financial Freedom, but this month we get to talk all about Erin and her time in the military. So welcome to the show again.
Hi, me. I'm so excited to be back.
Let's talk about your time in the military, and we always start with, why did you decide to join the military?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a loaded question, because I think the decision I made as a 17-year-old to go to West Point, I didn't quite understand it until I was a little bit older, I guess. So in high school, I was a swimmer, and all I wanted to do was get a full ride to college. So starting my junior year, I did some tours and talked to a bunch of coaches and was being like fairly heavily recruited. I was a pretty good swimmer. And what I found was, even when I was getting like a full ride, there was still this expectation that I would cover entertainment, you know, maybe a portion of room and board or food, which as a swimmer, I wouldn't have been able to get a job to make that kind of money. So I would have had to be dependent on my parents, which is what I was trying to get away from, because my parents, I was pretty spoiled growing up. I got everything I wanted. We lived in a huge house. I got a new car when I turned 16, but it always came with a condition. And I kind of worked for my dad. And I say kind of worked because I didn't get paid, but I got all these things that always came with the condition. So I knew I wanted to be completely independent. And as a collegiate swimmer, that's what was going to let me go there. But if I wasn't able to get everything covered, I just would have to ask my parents for food money, spending money, travel money if I wanted to come home. And I didn't want to do that. So West Point sort of presented itself. They started calling me when I was a freshman, which was completely overwhelming. The service academies get, you know, little bit more lenient rules in terms of recruiting, and they can start a lot earlier. And I chose the high school I went to. My parents sent us to private schools, and we had to choose our high school. And so I literally just got through the process of choosing my high school, and they're like immediately getting us into like PS or whatever, SAT prep and stuff like that. And I was so overwhelmed, and I didn't want to talk to the coach. My mom made me talk to the coach. She was like, don't close this door. So anyway, it wasn't until like at least two years later that I came to West Point for a tour that I realized this was where I wanted to be and was also going to allow me to be completely independent, which I don't think I quite understood what that meant at the time, but it makes so much sense now with like my post-military life. So anyway, that was, I think, a huge thing. I had no clue what I was getting into. I'd never even met anybody in the military. I didn't know anybody that went to West Point. It was a steep learning curve for sure.
Yeah, that reminds me of when I ran cross country in college or in high school, and I was recruited, but then it was like, we can give you this much money, but then you have to cover the rest, like room and board. And like, you started adding that up, you're like, oh, that's a lot more money than I thought. I thought a full ride meant that everything was paid for, but there's still, even if you get your room and board paid for, there's still a lot of other expenses that you have to, you know, and being a college athlete, it is a lot of work going to school and then going, being an athlete. It's so much. So how can you have time to have a job as well? So that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting that you were like, I had no idea what I was getting into. I think a lot of people who go to West Point have no idea exactly what they're getting into.
Yeah, I think there's a good amount that are like legacy kids who's like all their siblings went there and their parents and their grandparents. So I think they kind of know. But still, I mean, until you're there, you can't really understand it. And I even remember like coming on my tour. So I live at West Point now, which is interesting, like coming full circle. It's so dark and gray here and very dreary, very historic, very like just sort of a prestigious feel here. But I remember coming for my like overnight visit and I wasn't impressed with like the facilities, certainly wasn't impressed with like the dorms, like we call barracks, but I still felt like this was the place for me. And I felt like this was going to be where I would like sort of launch into adulthood. And little did I know at that point, like just how true that would be and how much that would play out and how I'd be able to graduate with no debt and get a job and then get a master's degree when I was still in the military. And I used tuition assistance and paid for the rest. And then when I got out, I used my GI Bill to get a doctorate and 3 degrees, no debt, you know, have had plentiful opportunity for additional career, you know, jobs afterward. And I just attribute all of that to that initial like foundation. And the network too.
Oh yeah, the network's so important. So what was West Point like? You talked about you weren't quite prepared for it, but what was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, I fairly enjoyed it. There were, of course, like moments, but what I really liked about it and what sticks out to me the most is during basic training, I felt less anxious than I have in my entire life. And I struggle with anxiety. To this day, it's always something I've struggled with. I think it's just sort of part of my nature. And I remember being at basic training where no one could get in touch with us. They didn't even really have cell phones at the time. And we weren't able to like text or anything, but we weren't even allowed to have any access to phones. In the whole like 8 week summer, we got 3 phone calls. Nobody could get in touch with me. I didn't have to take care of my siblings. I didn't have to deal with my dad's business or paying bills and things like that. And for the first time in my life, I had no one to worry about but myself. And all I had to do was perform. And I really thrived in that environment. I just like sort of rose to the occasion and I did really, really well and quickly created a good reputation for myself as a hard worker and someone who was just going to get it done. And it was just, it felt like it was where I was meant to be. And interestingly, over the years, like the most stressful times for me were when I was dealing with things outside of West Point and dealing with family challenges and stuff like that. So it was, I had no idea what I was getting into in the sense of like the commitment, what a day-to-day would look like for a cadet. It's nothing like a normal college. You know, I'd swim practice every morning, every night, class all day, had to go to breakfast, had to go to lunch, had to go to most dinners. So it was quite different and I had no clue, but I think I settled in and I don't know if I thrived, but I certainly did better than most.
You made it through. I think that's interesting because now, today, most boot camps, you're allowed to get a cell phone. And like sometimes it's taken like on the weekend, like you get your free time and you get your cell phone. And I think it's interesting because I kind of have like mixed feelings. Like I like the accessibility and the fact that you're able to call home. But also when I went to field training, which was 28 days, they took our phones. When we got there, all they did were call. I mean, maybe you could text if you hit all the numbers. But like, there was no contact except for letters. And I feel like it's kind of distracting, especially because like Air Force boot camp is only 6 weeks. And it's kind of distracting if every week you can like get, I feel like maybe 3 times, you know, like you said, you had 3 times. And instead of having to use pay phones, you know, having your cell phone, it makes more sense. But I don't know, I just feel like there's kind of like this push-pull because there is something valuable where you have like no distractions and you can focus just on yourself and not have to feel like you could have had this weight like every Sunday I'm going to have my phone and I'm going to call my parents and have to like check up on my siblings and make sure everything's okay. And instead you just had like a short conversation, yes, I'm alive, and then hung up the phone and you didn't have that. So I think that's interesting. Kind of makes for an interesting, like, I don't know, discussion, because I feel like there's pros and cons on both sides, but I can see like more pros because it's not that long in the grand scheme of life.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. So the reason we're back at West Point is because my husband is still active duty and he's teaching, and he sees just how distracted the cadets are and how many different directions they're pulled in. And they, you know, there's now we have Snapchat is still a thing, and Instagram and Facebook was hardly a thing, even like it started as when I was in college, but it wasn't a thing that you spent a lot of time on. You went and you put like a sentence fragment as like your update. It wasn't like we were posting all this stuff and sharing all this stuff. So we talk about that a lot, how much the cadets have to balance nowadays, and they don't know any different, but I think it's a lot. I think, and then I think the other thing is like, it takes away from your ability to bond and connect with the people that you're right there with. Like, we had no choice but to get super close with the people to our left and the right, people in our formation, the people we're running with and laying in the patrol base with, you know, that with them having cell phones now, they can keep their connections with their other friends from home or wherever. And I just wonder how much that affects their relationships in person.
Yeah, that's so interesting. That's such an interesting topic. I think it needs to be a future podcast episode because it's so interesting. And then if you add in like the academies and how that affects it. Yeah, I got home from my deployment in 2010, and like that was right after the iPhone came out. And this guy was telling me, oh yeah, I have an app on my phone for Facebook, and now I don't even go on my computer. So it like even like, and I was like, whoa, that's so cool. And now I'm like, now I take it off my phone, so I only go on it on the computer. So it's kind of funny.
I have to like hide my phone to get a break. Like, that's the only way that, you know, we're just so, we're overly connected. We're too easy to reach.
All right, let's get back. That's a good side conversation and definitely something I need to look into more because it's so interesting. But let's talk about, you went through West Point and then you graduated. And what was your career field and what did you do first?
Yeah, so I branched engineers. So I was an officer in the Army for almost 8 years on active duty. So I went to, at the time, they called it Bullock 2 out at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. It was like 7 weeks of general Army training. It wasn't specific to any branch. That's where we qualified on our weapons and did land navigation and all that kind of stuff. And then I went from there to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri for my engineer basic officer course. And that was longer, like 7 months or so, maybe longer, and got to do all the specific engineering stuff before I went to my first unit at Fort Campbell in, so this was like 2010. And, you know, at that point, it was like, the question was, when are you going to deploy? It wasn't, are you going to deploy? It was just, are you going to go right away? Or are you going to have a little time before you go? And so I got there, we stayed home for the first like probably 10 or 11 months, essentially like prepared for the deployment that whole time, then deployed for a year, then came back for a year. Then I went to the career course back at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, did my company command at Fort Bragg in an infantry unit. The command queue for engineers was years and years long. So I started interviewing for commands. I took the first one that I got because I wanted to have kids. I wanted to get through command and then have my first baby. And when I was commanding that infantry unit, which also included the pre-ranger course, I was the commander of the pre-ranger course and the leadership out there. That's when they opened up ranger school, or at least started to consider ranger school for women. So I did the pre-ranger course while I was there. I was like 29 at the time. I was a little too old, at least for me, and I had baby fever. But I did a couple pre-ranger courses. And then by the time they finally said women could go to ranger school, I was so over it. So I didn't go. I had already shaved my head twice and I was just ready to start a family. So finished up my command at Fort Bragg, went back to Fort Campbell, where my husband started with 5th Special Forces Group. And 2 years into that, we had a baby like a year and a half into that. And then 2 years in is when I would have had to PCS, and he still stayed for another 3 years. So that's when we realized, when I got put on deployment orders the same month as him, when our daughter was 6 months old, we realized this dual military thing is not going to work. I was going to have to deploy, leaving her while he was deployed too, and then also come home and then PCS, you know, move away from him while he stayed at Fort Campbell with 5th Special Forces Group. And it just wasn't something we wanted. So without a plan, we made a decision that night, the night that I got my deployment orders via email, and I submitted my request for resignation the next day, typed it up like the next morning. My boss signed it that day. He was so supportive. And then like 3 days later, my papers were signed and I was out 5 months after that. So it was a whirlwind.
That is a whirlwind. Let's go back a little bit to your time. So you were an engineer and then you deployed to Iraq pretty quickly after going active duty in the Army with your commission. So what was that experience like? Because that was kind of like the wind down of Iraq, if I got my years right, because it was like 2010.
Sure was. Yep. So we were the last engineer unit in Iraq. So we got there like January of 2011, and we were told, you're shutting down Iraq, get all the equipment out, or, you know, transition it over to whoever we were giving it to, and be prepared to stay for 18 months. Like, there's no one backfilling you. Who knows how long you're going to be there. So we were in it, right? Like, and that was a huge mental strain, like not knowing, you know, not having a countdown, not knowing when we were coming back. And then the other thing was, I just remembered this right now, but the government kept threatening to shut down. And they kept saying, like, there's a chance you're not going to get paid. And I'd never heard of that before. I don't know if it just wasn't a thing or just, you know, I was still a kid whenever that was talked about. But I was like, the only thing keeping me going here is my paycheck, right? Like my tax-free paycheck. And I was so kind of messed up by the idea of like not getting that. So that was a challenge. But anyway, we ended up coming back right before Christmas. So we stayed like the entirety of 2011, but it was just shy of 12 months.
Yeah, that is crazy. And I remember because I was still in the Air Force in 2011 when they shut down the government for like 4 days. And I was like, so perturbed that I had to go to work and didn't know when I was going to get paid. And I was in the United States, so I really had no reason to be that upset. It was a huge thing of like, I'm working and I don't know when I'm going to get paid. And they ended up, you know, passing the budget before the 15th, so everyone got paid. I think it was just delayed a few days. But that is, yeah. And then not having my countdown clock when I was deployed was like the thing that helped me get through the day. So like, it could be a year, it could be 18 months. That's really challenging because we don't have any.
It sucks. Yeah, especially, so we had like the countdown to R&R. So that was back in the days when you got like your 2 weeks of R&R. But coming back from R&R, like that was a really, really rough time. Because we just didn't know. We had no idea. So that was like August. My brother got married that August. So I was able to come home for that. But yeah, it was rough going back. But then once we went back after that, things started to move. Because like before that, it was like we weren't making any movement to leave the country. Like we're like, we're going to be here literally forever. And then we finally started. And I wonder if that had anything to do with the budget. If they're like, you know, we need to start making this move a little bit. But yeah, it started to move after that, so things got better.
Well, that makes sense that like you got back and then, you know, you left a few months later after you got home from your R&R, so it makes sense that stuff started to move. But all that lead up time, you're like, we're just sitting here not doing anything and we're it.
Yeah,
that would be really hard. And then you said, let's talk a little bit about like what it was like to be in an infantry when women were like, they were talking about women being in infantry and they were talking about like that change. And then, you know, you did the schooling in the first part. But so what was the like climate around women in the unit? Did you feel supported? Did you feel like you were having to prove yourself? What was that like?
So as an officer and as a commander, I felt very, very respected. I, you know, I'd had some issues with one-offs here and there throughout my career. But especially once I hit command, I felt supported and respected. Now, granted, I was in the 82nd, which they weren't on any sort of deployment schedule. So it's a little bit different than what I had experienced at Fort Campbell when our op tempo was just crazy and we were deploying all the time. So the like busy was different there, but I had great relationships. So it was an interesting command. I commanded in the 82nd Headquarters Battalion. So as the Alpha Company commander, and a lot of my company outranked me. So it was I was a captain. It was a lot of majors and lieutenants, colonel. There was even a full-bird colonel in my company. And when they started talking about Ranger School, I had already had a sapper tap. I went to sapper school, which is somewhat equivalent to Ranger School. It's shorter, but it's harder. And it's also more mentally challenging than Ranger School is. There's a lot more like academic sort of stuff. There's a lot of demolitions. It's more engineer focused. So I was the 16th woman to get my sapper tab. I did that when I was like 23. And this was, you know, 5-6 years later. And so when this guidance came out that we're thinking about opening Ranger School to women, we're trying to figure out what that looks like, I felt a lot of pressure. Not just felt a lot of pressure, like I was outright told, if anyone's going to do this, it has to be you. Like, you've proved that you can do it. They knew me by then. Every Monday morning, we did a company run and I would smoke my platoon. I was a pretty good runner, still a decent runner, but at the time I was a pretty good runner. And I could smoke most of them, especially the older ones. So we would have these, like, we would just go for a 4-mile run. And then the last mile, I would like just run them into the ground and see who could keep up. So I had that reputation of being strong and fit. And then they already knew I had my sapper tab. I had gone to airborne school, air assault school, pathfinder school. So they knew I could do it. And so I felt a lot of pressure to go. And I was commanding the pre-ranger course. So when they opened up, they did a pre-ranger course for women at Fort Bragg in the winter. It was hellacious. It was so cold. And I was the only woman who passed it. And the morning of graduation, it wasn't officially graduation because we weren't allowed to graduate at that point, but they did a ceremony for us. And up until that morning, the only thing I hadn't passed was the chin-ups. So the PT test included, I don't know if it still does, but at the time you had to do 6 chin-ups. And I did like 5 on the first day. And then we did like a bajillion chin-ups while we were there. So I was able to knock out my 6th one or do 6 in a row at the end. But right before that, I was fairly certain that was the only thing I needed to do. But you just don't necessarily know if you've passed everything else. Like, of course, you know if you pass land nav and you think you passed your patrols, but you don't necessarily know for sure. So I remember like stretching before we went into that last PT test and one of the cadre coming up to me and saying, you better get that 6th chin up. And so I knew in that moment, I was like, this is it. And I just felt really supported. I was like, I knew the girls had my back. Like, we bonded in a way that only you could do in the fields of in the freezing cold, you know, and doing something that no one had ever done, or no one certainly expected us to do well. I think people wanted us to completely fail. And even though I was the only one who passed, majority of the girls just missed one thing. Like, they missed one land nav point, or they missed their run was like 10 seconds too slow. Like, we put up a really good showing, especially considering that we had no training. No one had ever put time into this. We never did any of it. So anyway, we killed it. And so I did feel very, very supported, but at the time it was still this very like up in the air thing. And the other frustrating thing was my husband and I were like, our careers matched. We both graduated West Point on the same day. We both went engineers. We both went to sapper school together. We went to most of our schools together. And then when he said, I want to go to Ranger School, they were like, okay, go. And then when it was like, I want to go to Ranger School, they made me go to 3 pre-Ranger courses before they would even say, okay, we'll think about letting you go. So that was really frustrating, especially as like a 29-year-old woman who had baby fever. So it was an interesting time, but I'm grateful to have been part of that. And the ladies that there's been over 100 now that have their Ranger tabs. They are so insanely impressive. They're absolutely amazing. And I'm really glad that they got an opportunity to get out there and just show what they can do.
It doesn't surprise me that you guys like knocked it out of the park and like that you got like the U-Pass and that everyone else was so close, because I feel like I was so annoyed as like all that stuff was happening because I deployed and was attached to an infantry unit. And you know, you can't be in an infantry, but you can be attached. And I was like, I don't know how it's different. We went on the same missions. And so when they were like, can women do it? I was like, well, you didn't care what my gender was when you just changed the word, you know? I mean, all the other guys were right. Attached to, but it was like, that was their workaround. But then they're like, we need to do a survey. We need to try this stuff. And it's like, but women are already doing it. And so.
Already doing it. Yeah. And that same experience as a combat engineer, I've got my sapper's tab, but I wasn't allowed to serve in a sapper unit. And I wasn't allowed to be a combat engineer, but every single one of my soldiers was a combat engineer. And we did combat engineering missions every day in Iraq. So they have come a long way, thankfully. But yeah, that was super frustrating to not get that recognition and always have it sort of be like an asterisk next to it, or like a, yeah, she did it, but...
Even though it was the exact same. But there was still an asterisk.
That we knew that. We knew that, and I think they knew that too.
Which but... I think is why you got so much support from, like, the trainers and the people in the unit, because they knew that. And I feel like a lot of the pushback and the hate that women received came from people who either deployed, you know, a long time ago, or were civilians and hadn't deployed at all, and they only had, like, the media. And so I feel like that was, like, part of... There wasn't a very good PR campaign done by the military. Like, they should have highlighted what women... Instead, they were like, we're kind of breaking the law, so we're gonna just not highlight it. And I was like, that did a disservice to women and what they had done. So I'm glad that now, but I'm still working to, like, share these stories, because I think people need to know, like, the reason that women have the ability to do what they did today isn't because the military woke up one day and was like, let's try this. It's because women proved that they could do it. And then the military is like, we have to have women. And so then they changed the law.
And showed what an asset they are and what value they bring. Yeah. You know, what's really interesting. The biggest haters in my experience were military spouses. I cannot tell you how many people reached out to me, some like on Facebook that I didn't even have any connection with. And they would ask me if I thought that women should do it. And I was like, well, obviously I'm doing it. You know, I'm like, what a stupid thing to say. And it was so frustrating. And they were like, my husband says. And I was like, well, can you come up with your own thought on that? And also maybe not badger me about it, because, you know, if you thought about this for 2 seconds, you would know I'm obviously pro women in Ranger School if I'm a woman trying to go to Ranger School. So I found that really interesting. And it wasn't, I found more pushback from women, mostly spouses, than I did from any men. And it wasn't until like later, and more so like once I got into the business world, that I realized like the competition, there's no competition at the top. At the top, it's all collaboration. And the top is where big things happen and people are working together, and they realize that your success doesn't mean that someone else had to fail. And unfortunately in the military, and even in organizations led by women for women, like, we're taught that only a few can be the best and only a few can be successful. So inevitably we start, this competitive spirit ends up like bringing other people down. And it took me a long time to see and get past that. But it's still also something I have to like actively work on constantly, because I think it's sort of in our nature to feel that way.
Yeah, and the culture. I mean, I think the culture has taught us that we have to, you know, fight to be seen, fight to get that one spot. You know, it's really interesting. There's so much we could talk about. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I'm so glad that you got to share your experience, because I think people need to know, like, the history of what women did to make it so that women could have all the opportunities they have today. And it's just amazing to be like part of that and see what women are doing. It's just like you said, it's collaboration and community. I'm not upset that I didn't have the same opportunities. Instead, I'm excited because I see women pushing boundaries even more and doing more amazing things. And so it's like a rising tide lifts all boats, and not like, well, I didn't get, you know, like, you just get to see and cheer on the next generation, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, I agree.
So you ended your story talking about how you got deployment orders and you had a baby and your husband got deployment orders and you guys were like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And I understand, I was dual military, so I understand how complicated it is. So in that 5 months, as you're planning to get out of the military, your husband's deployed, or is he getting ready to deploy?
He was deployed like 2 months after my paperwork was signed, and then he deployed for like the last 3 months of that time. Yeah.
So what was that like, getting ready to transition out of the military? Like, how did you figure out what to do? And then you have, like, you know, your spouse is gone because he's deployed, and you have a child, so like you have all that's a lot to deal with. So what was that like?
Honestly, I did not deal with it at all when I was in the military, because I don't know that I realized what I was supposed to be dealing with. And I had a lot of things happening all at the same time. I became a mom, which like rocked my entire world, like to the core. I thought I was going to be this like super career driven military officer who was going to make general someday. And then 3 days after maternity leave, I'm sitting at my desk and I get an email saying, you're going to Afghanistan. And I was like, my first thought was, no, I'm not. And my second thought was, I must not be a very good soldier if I don't want to deploy. And so I kind of realized in that moment that like the conversation wasn't about how can I make this happen simultaneously. It was how can I move on to something else so that I can put my family first. And that was the only way my brain went. I didn't even consider trying to deploy or trying to keep doing the dual military things. We had done our family care plan, like went through the process of notarizing all that stuff and doing the whole rigmarole of paperwork and setting it all up. But it was very much just a thing we did because we had to. It wasn't anything we ever wanted to execute because our parents, my girls have three sets of grandparents. So we would have had to literally, who were all working, they were all working at the time. We would have had to choose one of those three to take our daughter at 6 months old and put her in daycare. And we were just like it made no sense. And it's just not what we wanted. So it was also so hard for me to drop her off at daycare a mile away. And I was like really struggling with breastfeeding and all that stuff. And I'm like, I've put in so much effort to get to where I am. And now I'm expected to just drop all that. So anyway, we got these deployment orders 3 days after maternity leave. I was like delirious. I was so tired. I wasn't processing things normally. I knew my husband was leaving in 3 months. And then I was told I'm leaving the same month. And it was just like, this is not a choice. This is the thing I'm going to do to survive and get through this. And he could not get out because he had just finished the Special Forces qualification course. So he was stuck. He had his ADSO and had to serve a couple more years. So part of the reason it happened so fast is because the timing lined up so that it was like right before Thanksgiving break or Christmas break. And I guess it would have been March, April, May, June. So yeah, right before Christmas. So this was like June that I dropped my packet. So I didn't really want to come back in after Christmas, after taking that time off. So I got everything done as quickly as I could, went through everything and just kept, it was just survival. It was like, get to the next thing, get to Christmas, get to my husband deploying. So I went from professional focused on a career to new mom without a husband and no career. And I struggled and I lost my whole entire network because I didn't realize that that was such a huge part of my identity. So I went from hanging out with none of my friends had kids yet. They were all still either pre-kids or didn't have kids and very professionally oriented. And then I started hanging out with a bunch of stay-at-home moms in Tennessee, and I'm from New York. And that was an interesting something I'd never been exposed to. And they just had a very different idea of parenting and motherhood than I did. And they wanted to homeschool and I would rather have poked my eyeballs out. And I had a hard time feeling like I was like an adequate mother, and I hated it, which didn't help with feeling like that either. So yeah, it was a lot. But back to the question, I did not process any of it until I got out of the Army. I didn't know that I needed to process it. I didn't know what a transition that was. Nobody talked about it. Nobody shared that with me or anything.
Yeah. Your story really resonates with me. I got out right after my son was born, and it was planned, but I didn't process or know that I needed to process. And my husband went to 2 months of training, and so I was like getting out of the military. He's gone. Baby's not sleeping. I'm wondering, what the heck am I doing? And I like really struggled with all the things. And I really felt like I was giving something up that I didn't even want, but I felt like I was giving, you know, I had wanted it before I had a kid. So your story really resonates with me, especially like not processing. Like I held on to being an officer until I was out of the military. And then it was like, it was gone and my identity shifted. And so many of my friends, they didn't have kids because that was not the stage they were in. And so I just felt, and then I felt like I was failing at everything because I wasn't doing it the way you're supposed to.
Yeah, which I think every mom feels like, whether they're making a major transition like that or not. And the more people that I share this with, the more I hear, oh my God, that was you're telling my story. Like, I remember what that was like, or that's the stage I'm in. And I'm glad we're talking about it more because there's nothing worse than like feeling all these things, but then also feeling guilty and also feeling inadequate. It just adds to the mess of it all.
Yeah, I think it's so important that we talk about it, because one of the biggest turning points for me was when I talked to a male veteran and we were talking about transition, and he was like, I felt lost, I felt confused, and I was like, oh, it's not because I got out of the military the wrong, like, I felt like I got out of the military the wrong way. I got out of the military, not, I didn't find a job. If I had found a job, I would have been fine. But then he's telling me his story, and he did go to school and found a job, and he was telling me about how hard it was to transition, and I was like, it just took, like, this weight of pressure of, like, oh, I'm not the only one, and it was just so life-changing to hear his story, and so that's kind of like why I think it's so important to talk about it, because you need to know that you're not alone, because the military, and that's one of the, I think the challenges with like active duty and veteran are like so separated. And so when you're active duty, you're like focused on the mission. Kind of like you said, you didn't process anything until after you got out, because I feel like you're so busy and you don't know what's coming. And then you leave and you're like, what just happened? Like the ground fell out underneath me. And so I'm like, how can we get people, you know, connected? Because I went to the Joint Women Leadership Symposium, which is supposed to be primarily focused on transition, and I was the veteran there, but everyone was focused on all the active duty stuff that was going on, because they were like drowning in all the things they're doing, and no one asked me about like transition, and I was like, I'm here, I can help. But they were so like focused on all the things they had to do for active duty, they couldn't even process the next phase.
Yeah, they don't know what they don't know.
But you did turn it around, and now you went back to school. Is that the first thing that happened? I kind of peeked at your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, so I had my GI Bill, and I became a stay-at-home mom just because there wasn't a lot of opportunity for me to. The career opportunities that presented themselves didn't work with a deployed husband and no family around. I didn't have childcare that would watch my kids my first kid from 7 to 6 every day. It just wasn't a thing that I could swing or would have made any sense for me to, you know, pay for all that childcare. So I said, I'll stay at home. And then I was like, well, I have this GI Bill. At least I can have some money coming in and be working on something. And I loved school. I really enjoyed my doctorate. So I did a doctor of business administration. It took me 5 years, probably really 4 years of like active studying, because during COVID, the school almost went under, and which would have been really interesting because I had already finished all my coursework. I had 57 credits in, and I just had to finish my dissertation. And I ended up getting a whole new committee, like the president of the university, the dean, and the dean were on my committee. So I ended up like rewriting my paper halfway through, which was fine. It ended up being way better, but it was like touch and go there for a bit. But anyway, I did that because I thought I would teach at the collegiate level. I really wanted to come back to West Point while my husband taught on active duty and I taught as a civilian. But now that we're here and my kids are in school and they get a lot of days off, today is a snow day, and they get just a lot of days off. I don't know that it makes any sense for me to go to work here. I thought I would start next year because my youngest will be in kindergarten, so she'll go full time. But even full time is 9 days off in November and 4 days off every single month, early release every first Wednesday, just so many things. So I'm really happy doing what I'm doing as a business owner. I'm a realtor. I'm a real estate investor first and foremost. I like to flip houses, renovate houses, and then just hold on to real estate, collect rent. And then I also am a realtor who brings agents onto my team and coaches and mentors them to build a really awesome business for themselves. And I'm just all about like lifestyle businesses. And that's kind of what I offer to them. So yeah, super happy where I am. Constantly adjusting. Things are very fluid and we travel a lot. We're going to spend, me and my girls are going to spend like the entire month or the entire summer in Europe. So I bought my flight there and my flight back. I have no plans otherwise. So we'll figure that out. But yeah, just trying to enjoy every second and enjoy time with my 5 and almost 8-year-old and do good things.
I love that. I love how you like shifted your focus, and then you have talked about like one of the things that I wonder, like how do parents who work do it? Because like there are, my kids get out early every Wednesday, and then they didn't have school yesterday because it was Lincoln's birthday. And then yeah, there's all these days off that are not federal holidays or any holiday of any sort. And you're just trying to figure out how to make it work. And I like having the flexibility. And it sounds like you've created a career around like your lifestyle, and you have the flexibility to work when you need to work and also be a mom for your kids. So that's really cool too.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it sounds really nice and it is great, but it is challenging too. But certainly beats, you know, being in the office 9 to 5 every single day. So
there's always challenges and there's always things. Like, it's easy to say, oh, the grass is so green. And it's like, yeah, but there's also some weeds in the garden that we have to pull out.
For sure. And it takes a long time for that garden to grow. That's something that I have to tell people about. Like, on social media, it seems like my business just exploded overnight. But no, I spent like 2 years of not taking a day off to get to that point. So it was worth it, but it was hard.
I understand that. Yeah, people are like, you just started a podcast. I was like, no, I was blogging for years and working really hard and no one was listening or paying attention. And then the podcast did help and like changed everything for my business, but it wasn't the first thing that I did. And there was a lot of hard work and networking and, you know, lots of things that happened. So that makes a lot of sense. So is there anything either from your time in the military or from your transition that we didn't cover before I ask my last question?
I don't think so.
So my last question is, what advice would you give to a young woman who's considering joining the military?
Yeah, I would say find the right people, find your people, find your group. And no matter where your career takes you, whether it ends abruptly or last 20 plus years, keep those people by your side and make sure you have sort of like your core group of people that can lift you up and keep you on the right path, and don't ever let them go, even when you get out.
I love that. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show and for supporting the podcast. I'll link to the other episode that you were on so that if people want to listen to it and learn more about VFF, they can check it out. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.